At slightly past 7 in the evening, Kelly rapped lightly on Pitt's cabin door. She stood in the passageway, still clutching the handle of the leather case. "You must be starved," he said, smiling to show he wasn't angry or annoyed.
"Are you Dirk Pitt?"
"Yes, and you're..."
"Kelly Egan. I'm so sorry to have caused you..."
"No trouble at all," he interrupted. He motioned to a desk with a tray of sandwiches and a pitcher of milk. Not exactly a gourmet dinner, but about the best the cook could do with what's left of our food supply. As she ate, he sat down in a chair opposite her. "Feeling like you belong to the human race again?" She smiled and nodded, looking like a schoolgirl who had been caught in mischief.
"You must be wondering why I didn't leave the ship."
"The thought crossed my mind."
"I was afraid."
"Of what? The man who attacked you and your father? I'm happy to report that he joined the other victims of the ship who drowned."
"There was another one," she said hesitantly. "A ship's officer. He seemed to be an accomplice of the red-haired man who tried to kill me. Together they attempted to steal my father's case, but all they succeeded in doing was pushing him over the railing into the water."
Tears came to Kelly's eyes as she relived her father's death. Pitt reached in a pocket and handed her a handkerchief.
"Can you describe this officer?"
"Yes, he was a tall black man. It wasn't the first time Dad was harassed," she said angrily. "He told me of being threatened on several different occasions."
"So what is so important that your father had to die for it?" said Pitt, gesturing at the case, sitting on the deck at her feet.
"My father is..." she paused. "Was Dr. Elmore Egan. He was both a mechanical and chemical engineer."
"I'm aware of the name," said Pitt. "Dr. Egan was the creator of several different types of water propulsion engines. As I recall, he also formulated a highly efficient diesel fuel that is widely used in the transportation industry."
"You know that?" she asked, impressed. "I'm a marine engineer. I'd get an F on the test if I hadn't heard of your father."
"Dad's latest project was the development of magneto-hydrodynamic engines," Kelly said.
"Like the propulsion units in the Emerald Dolphin."
She nodded silently.
"What little I've read about magneto-hydrodynamic engines suggested the technology was still 30 years away. That's why I was surprised to read they had been installed in the Emerald Dolphin."
"Everybody was surprised. But Dad created a revolutionary design that compounded the electricity found in seawater before running it through a highly magnetic core tube that is kept at absolute zero by liquid helium. The electrical current that is produced then sets up an energy force that pumps the water through thrusters for propulsion."
Pitt was listening attentively.
"Are you saying that his engine's only outside fuel source is seawater?"
"Saline has a very small electrical field. My father discovered a method of intensifying it to an incredible degree to produce energy."
"It's hard to envision a means of propulsion with an inexhaustible source of fuel."
Kelly's face reflected pride in her father.
"As he explained to me..."
"You don't work with him?" Pitt cut in.
"Hardly." She laughed for the first time. "I can't think in abstract terms. I never had it in me to conquer algebra. I majored in business at Yale, where I received my master's. I work as a merchandise analyst."
"What led your father to perfect the technology of magneto-hydrodynamic engines?"
"Early in his research, he reached a roadblock when his experimental engine exceeded power and energy expectations, but experienced extreme friction problems. He and Josh Thomas, a respected chemical engineer, then formulated a new oil that was 100 times more efficient than any commercial oil available on the market today. Now Dad had a new power source that could run indefinitely without measurable wear for years."
"So the super oil advanced your father's magneto-hydrodynamic engine from the drawing board to reality?"
"True," she acknowledged. "After the pilot model's successful test program, the Blue Seas Cruise Lines directors approached Dad about constructing and installing his engines in the Emerald Dolphin, which was then under construction.
They were also building an underwater luxury submarine passenger liner.
They gave him an exclusive license to build the engines. He told me that he was working on an even greater project, something that would cause an unbelievable impact on the future. Did he ever tell you what it was? No, she answered. He was very secretive, and said it was better that I didn't know. Pitt sat thoughtfully quiet. Then he nodded toward the leather case. Don't you think it's time you opened it? She hesitated for a long moment. Then, very slowly, she clicked the latches and lifted the lid. Oh, good Lord, she gasped. Pitt sat up. What is it? As if in slow motion, she turned the case around and let it fall from her hands to the deck. I don't understand, she whispered. It's never been out of my hands. Pitt leaned down and peered inside the leather case. It was empty. The Earl of Wattlesfield sailed into Wellington 6 hours ahead of Deep Encounter and met with a joyous yet solemn welcome. Thousands of people lined the waterfront, staring silently as the container ship slowly eased into a berth. New Zealand's heart went out to those who had miraculously survived the worst ship fire in maritime history. If the arrival of the Earl of Wattlesfield was a melancholy affair, the welcome awaiting the Deep Encounter took on the atmosphere of a wild party. As the survey ship came through Cook Strait, it was met by a small fleet of private yachts that swelled to hundreds of vessels of every description by the time her bow nosed into the harbor.